720 WGN. This is the opening to a Titanic movie from 1953 with Clifton Webb and Barbara Stanwyck. Looking at the history of cinema that dealt with the Titanic, it's obvious we can't get enough of it. And I've really got something good for you right now. William Hazelgrove is an author. We've had him on before. William, I just got to tell you, this book of yours, 160 Minutes, is just great. I was transfixed.
Oh, thank you very much.
No, I mean, really. I mean, I was like, what? I can't believe it. How come I never heard about any of this stuff with the Titanic? I mean, I literally got chills. It was amazing, the stories that you told in here. And it's heroism and incompetence. These two Marconi wireless operators, Jack Phillips and Harold Bride, right. what they did. I'll just let you start because there's too many different items for me to start on one because, you know, I'll just get lost in all the items I got. Like, I can't wait to get the David Sarnoff. All right, but never mind. I didn't say that. Okay.
Funny. Yeah, well, you know, I think what I try to do in my books is get into the mythology. I did it with the Wright brothers. Mm-hmm. I did it with Teddy Roosevelt, with Madam President. So what I did when I started Titanic, I knew the story. We all have seen Titanic, the movie, the latest one. We know the mythology, and this mythology was handed down. But there's a real story. There's a real story, as you said, that most people haven't heard, if not everybody. Mm-hmm. And it's infinitely more interesting than this, you know, story we were handed where the rich hand off their wives and children to the people in the lifeboats. They have a little bit of brandy, a cigar, and off they go. And so it was sort of painted in this sort of golden haze of, you know, the great, you know, sort of loyalty and chivalry, and that just isn't true with what really happened on the night of April 14th, 1912.
And today, by the way, is the anniversary of the discovery of the Titanic wreck in 1985.
Right, exactly. Yeah, they found it on the bottom of the ocean there. And so what I endeavored to do was to give you the real story. Mm-hmm. And it's a story, as you know, of three captains, Captain Rostrum, Captain Moore, and Captain Lord. And the reason it's called 160 Minutes for your listeners is that after Titanic struck that iceberg, it only had 2 hours and 40 minutes to live. So the race was on. And this is what people don't know is there was a huge rescue operation to try and get the Titanic before she sank. And of course, you know, all these ships were at varying distances. They turned around. They put up their lifeboats. They set up little hospitals in their cafeterias. And they went full speed for Titanic. Now, the problem was most of them were just too far. So they aren't going to get there. Now, the Carpathia, famously, is 50 miles away, and she will get there an hour late. But, and this is where the whole mythology of Titanic falls apart. We were told that Titanic was out there all alone. And this elevates Titanic to this great tragedy, that she was out there all alone in the North Atlantic. It was a very, very calm night, very cold. And she went down, and there's nothing anybody could do. But because of the new technology of wireless telegraphy, Harold Bride and Jack Phillips, these two very young officers who were sort of like the guys in the very beginning of personal computing. They were, you know, nobody really mm-hmm. understood the technology. So they start sending out these signals, and these signals start bouncing off, you know, the ionosphere at night. Mm-hmm. And Titanic had the most powerful set, so they went almost 2,000 miles. They hit all these ships. People start turning around, heading for Titanic. But only 10 miles away or less is the California. And the California has turned off their wireless, yet the officers on the bridge can see this strange ship very bright, and it looks very strange in the water. And they say to Captain Lord, who's a very imperious captain, he said, look, that I think that's the Titanic. And he says, no, that's not the Titanic, not at all. So he goes down to go to sleep, and then they start seeing rockets. And these rockets mean one thing, distress. So they call Lord up again, and they say, well, hey, she sent off rockets. He says, let me know if it changes. And literally, the ship that is so close that when Captain Smith puts his people into the lifeboats of Titanic, he says, see that light over there? Go, row toward that light. They'll pick you up. Row toward that. That's how close they were. He said, he's going to be coming. Row toward that light. So all these lifeboats, these 20 lifeboats, start heading for that light. But, of course, he doesn't come any closer. Meanwhile, on the other side is Captain Moore of the Mount Temple. Captain Moore's coming up to this ice field from the other side. Now, he was very close when he got the signal to come. He goes up to the ice field. His passengers sneak up on the deck because he told nobody to come up top. And he stops right at the edge of the ice field. And his passengers look on, and they see this ship sinking in front of them with rockets going off. And they can't believe it. His crew sees it, and they beg him to go further. But he doesn't. He doesn't. They even consider mutiny. And to make it worse, he starts to back away from the ice field. So these two ships were capable of picking up all those people. And we're talking about 1,500 people who would not make it into the lifeboats, right, who would drown. They could pick up those people, and nobody would have had to die there.
Well, there's a lot of, according to your book, and which, by the way, is called 160 Minutes, and we're talking with the author, William Hazelgrove. Right from the get-go, the Titanic was not preparing for any mishap whatsoever. Not only was it billed as the ship that couldn't sink, but they only had lifeboats for like half of the people on board to begin with. I mean, there was no way that everybody was going to get off that boat, no matter what. And every time, you know, and if you've only got, and with the class distinctions that started out at the beginning of the voyage, which you make abundantly clear, you know, you have the unbelievable first class passenger, which has in some cases famous names attached to it. And then you have second.
Yeah.
And then you go all the way down to third class, where the immigrants and the poor people are, and, you know, no one is prepared for any of this in any way, shape, or form. I mean, that's what I got from your book. Was right. I mean, right as that Titanic takes off, they're already set up for disaster because they don't have the equipment, the manpower to meet whatever demands they're going to need to save their passengers. It's just impossible. And they have this blind faith that this big boat is going to somehow be the best boat ever, and we're going to make it go 22 knots, and we're going to get to New York in record time, and don't worry about icebergs. I mean, reading this book, my mind exploded. You got to read this book, folks. I'm telling you. I mean, we've had authors on before, and I've said, oh, yeah, that's good. This is something else, and we're going to do more when we come back. Ooh, I just get chills thinking about this. When we come back on 720 WGN, there have been quite a few movies about the Titanic, but no book quite like this. 160 Minutes by William Hazelgrove, who's on the phone with us now. The technology of the wireless, Marconi being one of the main purveyors of that technology at that time, was brand new, so it could be somewhat understandable that with any new technology, you have doubters, and that maybe some captains of some other ships just didn't think it was anything that was really going to amount to anything. Because you said, like, the California, which was the ship that was literally 10 miles away from the Titanic throughout the entire sinking, the captain turned off the wireless. And meanwhile, these two guys are down in this wireless room tapping out these messages. And like you said, and everybody knows, the thing that struck me was, you know, when I worked for a radio station like WGN, the AM signal during the day goes so far, But during the evening, it goes farther because it bounces off the ionosphere. The same thing was true with these wireless guys. During the day, the wireless would go maybe 300 miles. At night, it would go 2,000. And here is David Sarnoff. Do you know who David Sarnoff became? One of the biggest media titans in the history of America. RCA, it goes on. NBC, it goes on and on. Tell the Sarnoff story.
Sure. So he's sitting on top of a department store, Wanamaker's, in Manhattan. And like you said, these signals are bouncing around, and he's, you know, he's 20-something guy, and because Wanamaker's thought it'd be really cool to have customers send out messages. And all of a sudden, his set goes off. He starts listening, and he hears Titanic's call for help. We're sinking, putting people in boats, struck an iceberg, you know, CQD, come quick, distress. Mm-hmm. And this is repeated over and over. Well, he can't believe it. And so then he finally runs and tells everybody, and of course he tells the New York Times, among others, which is, at this point isn't anything great, it's just another newspaper. But you know, he sets in motion, for the first time, a sort of real-time catastrophe that's happening as people watch. And, you know, and these signals are bouncing all over. There's a bunch of boys in New Jersey mm-hmm. who were all huddled around their set. And a lot of, you know, boys had these sets as like hobbies. And they'd string up a wire on the roof. And they're sitting there, and their parents have gone to bed. They're sitting in the kitchen. It's 1912. And all of a sudden, their set goes off. And they hear it's the Titanic asking for help. And they run and tell their parents, and their parents go, no, that's impossible. That ship's unsinkable.
Right.
There's no way that Titanic's sinking. So this new technology, people didn't understand how powerful it was. And as you were saying before, the captains of the ships really sort of poo-pooed it because, you know, they were sort of lords of their ship.
Yep.
And wireless came in and said, no, here's the outside world coming in. And yeah, so there was this sort of feeling that it was a gadget, that it was a luxury for passengers, but really didn't have much to do with safety of a ship. Well, Titanic proved the case because, as you said before, there were 700 people who were saved from those boats. Now, you're talking about the first class. The first class were mostly in those 20 boats. And the sad thing is, the 1,500 people in the water, those boats were equipped to hold 1,175 people. So 400 more people could have gotten the boats. Only one boat went back. They watched mm-hmm. all those people drown. And a few people said, we got to go back. And they said, no, we'll be swamped. We'll be swamped. So this is sort of the third dirty secret of Titanic, mm-hmm. that you know, these people sat there while, you know, and people said that the sound of all those people in the water was like locusts on a summer night, or when a ball gets hit at a ball game and the crowd roars. But the overriding sound was one of a long death wail that was in the same pitch. And these people carried this to their grave hearing this.
Yeah. And there's that story plus a whole bunch more in this book called 160 Minutes. There's another part of it that I found fascinating, and I hope we can get in it to the time that's left. If I've interpreted it correctly, when Sarnoff gets this message on the top of the Wanamaker building, and he tells the New York Times, which you said was not a great paper yet.
Right.
But this is the story, isn't it, not that makes the New York Times,
Yeah, because what happened was all the other papers were saying, oh, Titanic's fine. It's fine, because they just didn't know. The editor of the New York Times took a gamble, and he knew it would either make them or break them, and he said, no, she sank. She sank without, with horrible loss of life.
And he ran that not knowing.
No, absolutely. Right. He didn't know. And it panned out. And then, of course, he cornered, right, so the surviving operator, Harold Bride, comes back on Carpathia, and he engineers a deal to get his exclusive story for $1,000.
Yeah.
And they take him directly from the ship to a hotel, and it's the first breaking story of what really happened on Titanic.
I'm telling you, I mean, this book gets into areas that, if you stop and thought about it for half a second, well, of course, there was media at that time, but not like this. where they get this new technology, and Sarnoff gets this message, and he goes to the New York Times. And then there's this whole thing that happens afterwards, which you're referring to, about, you know, it, the media is always the media. Who's going to get the exclusive story, and how much will we pay for that? And Marconi himself shows up to make sure that he can control the narrative. I mean, right. Wow, it is a mind-boggler, this book. I can't tell you. It just takes you to places that you just didn't think about with the Titanic, and we've never been exposed to some of these things in the quote-unquote mythology of how it's been passed down through all these movies and the whole thing about the first-class people being heroic and all of that, and it's just not true.
And no, it's not. It's not. And of course, it was a riot on the ship, really, when the third class realized all the boats were gone, and 12 people were shot. And we know this from letters that were passed on after the fact.
Right.
Because think about it, 1,500 people realized there was no way off that ship.
You know, we're running out of time here. In fact, we are out of time. So, William Hazelgrove, thank you so much for being with us. We could talk about this for quite a while. Pick up this book, 160 Minutes, and you can go to the website, williamhazelgrove.com. This is really an eye-opener. It's a great story. Thanks for being with us.